Welcome to Vox Talks Economics, recorded live at the PSE CEPR Policy Forum, the Paris School of Economics. My name is Tim Phillips. In this episode, what caused the COVID era inflation in the United States? And can we say it's behind us yet? Inflation in the US, many other places as well, took off in 2021 and 2022 and is only now beginning to come under control. But was it caused by overheated labor markets, pushing up wages, commodity price rises, changes in demand, supply chain disruption? There are many reasons given. At the conference, Olivier Blanchard of the Peterson Institute has just given a keynote called The Inflation Burst, an anticipatory autopsy based in part on a paper with Ben Bernanke that evaluates these potential causes. He joins me now. Olivier, welcome.
Thanks for inviting me.
Olivier, many economists at the time, 2021, thought that inflation burst would be small, short-lived. That was a misjudgment. How damaging has that misjudgment been?
I think you have to distinguish between misjudgment on the fiscal side and misjudgment on the monetary side. Mm. I think that there was definitely misjudgment on the fiscal side. There's absolutely no question that the various spending programs, both from the Trump administration in 2020 and the Biden administration in 2021, were too large. They were well-intended. They tried to protect people, but they were, from a macroeconomic point of view, too large. I think that's the original sin. Now, given this, what about the monetary policy? I think, first, it should have been clearer when these fiscal spending programs were put together about what it thought and that they were too large. But leaving this aside, clearly they were a bit late in reacting. They didn't do anything in 20, very little in 21. And that was a mistake. Is it a big mistake? I'm not sure. I think it has complicated things a little bit, but it would not have made a gigantic difference. The problem, again, was too much demand coming from the fiscal side.
You distinguish between the reaction of two types of economists at the time. There were some that worried that inflation might come because the federal rescue plans would overheat the economy. How does that happen? That's basically just too much money chasing too few goods.
Yes. Yeah.
Others, that this would be a problem. The Phillips curve had become flatter. It had shifted down over the previous decade. So the COVID stimulus would not be inflationary. Did you find that credible at the time?
No, and I wrote about it at the time. I think the meta issue is that the amount of spending implied, potentially implied by the fiscal programs was so large that it would show up somewhere. Now, the more specific discussion was about the effects through the labor market. And it's true that if you took the Phillips curve, which had been estimated over the previous 20 years, you said, yes, there may well be overheating, but again, the slope of the Phillips curve is flat. Another way of saying this is not going to lead to a lot of wage inflation.
Yeah.
So maybe it's good for the economy, and yes, we'll get a bit more inflation, but nothing. So that was the view of the optimists, and it's probably represented 95% of the relevant economist population. There were a few people who disagreed, of which I was one, and another one was Larry Summers. And we said, no, something is going to happen. You cannot trust relations which have been estimated in a very quiet environment, which was the previous 20 years, what's known as the Great Moderation. And, you know, the slope of the Phillips curve is going to be much steeper when we get to really low unemployment. It's just going to put a lot of pressure on inflation. And expectations are going to de-anchor. People only say, well, there's inflation now, there's going to be inflation in the future. And so don't kid yourself, it's going to lead to more inflation. These were the two views.
We will get to what happened to both of those. But first of all, the story initially was just dominated by these enormous price spikes we had in used cars was a really surprising one. Energy prices, of course. Why was it such a shock that this would show up in the data? Why were we surprised by that?
So we have to go back to this distinction between the two groups. And in my presentation, I said both groups were largely wrong. And Ben Bernanke, in a presentation he's giving tomorrow, say both groups were partly right, which is true. So what happened is that the pessimists, namely Larry and I, among others, were right about inflation. It was very big. But where we were wrong was in thinking that it would happen through the labor market. We thought that, you know, there would be this enormous wage pressure. And there was not a whole lot of wage pressure. There was overheating by any variable you can look at. But the wage equation, to be nerdy about it, remained very stable. Mm-hmm. And the action came, as you said, from the rest, from the prices given wages. And I think we had not, and here I use a global we, we had not anticipated how much commodity prices would go up and the size of price spikes due to shortages. So that's where the action came from. That's what led to inflation. I think it was due to strong demand, but through a different channel from the one that I had anticipated.
Now, your model, your empirical analysis is attempting to disentangle what happened, what influences at which times. It's not the only autopsy that's being done into this spike in inflation at the moment. How is your approach different? What have you done here?
Well, we have a model as opposed to the kind of informal discussions which you find elsewhere. It's hard to say. And we basically thought, what is the kind of model that would explain the facts, would be understandable to policymakers, and allowed us to actually look at the data in some formalized way? I would say this was not done, as far as I can tell, by anybody else. Mm-hmm. It may have been done within central banks. I do not know. But we made a number of choices, which I think made the paper more successful in terms of visibility, which is we wrote a really simple model, as opposed to the tendency these days to write models based on micro foundations, which policymakers don't understand and don't care much about. And then it turned out that it was a really nice descriptive device, if you want. But I think the room was there to do that. We did it, and I would say it worked.
And coming out of that, what has it described? What have we discovered about what was driving inflation and is driving inflation now?
So I think we've learned a number of things. We've learned that most of the action quarter to quarter was due to large price shocks.
We beat
the usual ones, energy or food, but also price of cars because there was a shortage and so on. What we learned,
the prices for cars and trucks soaring in this,
was that these were very big. They dominated the news when they came out.
Prices have risen for lots of foods, but
the effect didn't last.
The most in the last year.
So when we actually simulate our model, we find that they have a very strong effect in the quarter in which they happen, and then it's gone in terms of inflation. Other shocks come, and that's terribly important because there was the opposite in the 1970s, which is you'd have a price of energy shock. It would lead workers to say, oh, inflation is going to be high. It would lead unions to have indexing wars, which would say, well, we want our money back. And this would lead not to just a one-time shock, but a long, difficult shock to handle. That just hasn't happened at all, which is good news. I think it says that the credibility of central bank has remained very strong. The fact that there hasn't been catch-up, or at least we have not been able to detect catch-up, which is the ability of workers to get back some of the real wage losses, is more surprising because we have fairly tight labor markets, and we think that workers might be in a position to ask for more, but they haven't. So I think this is the lesson. The other lesson is that although each month or each quarter, the news was about these shocks, what was behind the scene was a much less visible, low-frequency movement, which is that there was overheating in the labor market and there was pressure on wages, wage inflation. And now that the price shocks are largely gone, or at least we can hope so, no shortages are coming to an end, energy prices have often decreased, what is now visible is that. Looking forward, it's a fairly different type of inflation. It's inflation from the labor market, what I had predicted would happen at the beginning. And unfortunately, what was very useful on the way up, which was not much effect of a heating on wage inflation, is extremely nasty on the way down because you need a lot of unemployment in order to actually slow down wage inflation. And that's the situation in which I think many, many central banks are. So the future is a bit tough.
The focus is now very much back on watching what the central banks are doing and how they are reacting, something that those of us who aren't in the business got used to not doing very much. We didn't care very much for a few years. Does what you've discovered here imply that so far the Fed's reactions to what have been going on with inflation have been appropriate?
So again, I think that they should have moved probably a year earlier.
Mm-hmm.
And even earlier, they should have told the administrations that this was a no-no. But leaving this aside, I think when they woke up, they acted right. And they have acted right. Again, the notion that you increase the interest rate and then magically 3 months later, unemployment is 1% higher is something that only people who are young enough not to have lived through previous inflations believe. It's a very random process. And we tend to think that you increase the interest rate, it starts doing things to the financial market. Some people take decisions, but maybe they have these large cushions of excess savings. And so it doesn't work. And then you have a financial system. If there's stress, it's good, but too much stress is bad. And so the Fed is navigating this. Given that, if I were in Jay Powell's shoes, I would do probably roughly what he's doing. My sense is that there might be enough in the pipeline. Although real interest rates are still not incredibly high.
Mm-hmm.
Again, people have forgotten the 70s and the 80s. So my sense is they have to navigate the waters more or less as they are. So at this stage, I would not criticize the Fed at all.
In December 2022, Larry Ball and Daniel Lee explained what had caused shortages of goods in the US and estimated the effect on the prices that consumers were paying. Listen to our episode titled Understanding US Inflation.
Turning the model around and looking at the future and what it projects, what does it tell us about the likely future path of inflation?
I have no doubt about the commitment of central banks to decrease inflation.
Yeah.
I think that can be taken as a given. The question is how long it takes. I think there is a decision, which is that if you want to do it quick because you're worried that expectations are going to de-anchor, they haven't, but suppose you are, that may well be very costly in terms of unemployment. If you're more relaxed and you decide that you're going to do it and you watch like a hawk how expectations are moving, but if they're not moving,
mm-hmm.
and you say, well, you know, maybe the end of 24, 25 is fine, then you probably need more unemployment. I have no doubt about that in the U.S. How much? We really do not know, but some, mm-hmm. no question. So I would expect interest rates to continue to increase a bit and unemployment to increase slowly is my best guess, but it's a bit fan shot.
Yeah, but I was looking at the graphs that you put up and to get back down to 2%, it turns out that ratio of vacancies over unemployment is the one that does a lot of work and it would have to, the denominator would have to go up quite a lot.
So here there's, you know, a nerdy part to this, which is yes, the vacancy unemployment ratio would have to be very low. What this implies for unemployment itself
yeah.
is not obvious, but yes, it would imply substantially high unemployment, I think. Now, there's a way out, which is maybe we don't need to run the last mile. We can walk the last mile or we cannot walk at all. And we can decide that maybe 3% target inflation would be a really good number. And I continue to think that this, in the absence of history, would be the right number, no question. I understand the issues of credibility.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to get to 3 before the discussion takes place. But I wouldn't be unhappy if when we get to 3, central banks are more relaxed.
Mm-hmm.
That issue will come back for sure.
Is there much chance of that, do you think? Because you've been pushing this idea for a few years now and it didn't take on with the European Central Bank.
Never despair. No, but I think there's a difference, which is that when we were below 2%,
yeah,
and I was talking about 3 or 4, the notion, well, this is an inflation lover that really just wants inflation to be higher. And it was felt that this would destroy credibility of the central banks. Now, what's ironic is that, you know, they did things which are 100 times more exotic.
Yes.
Like QE of in any dimension you can think of, or negative rates and so on. And they didn't lose credibility. So retrospectively, it could have been done. But now it's different because it's on the way down, right? And so the question is, I'm not asking for an increase in inflation. I'm asking for stopping the decrease to some level. So politically, it's a bit easier. Whether it happens or not, I'm nearly sure it will not, at least not anytime soon. But they may well slow walk. They may say, we have a dual mandate, and we don't want at this stage to have too much unemployment. We don't like 3%, but we'll accept it and go slowly to 2. I think that discussion they cannot have now, but when they are there, they could have it.
Now, I just mentioned Europe. This paper was specifically about the US economy. Yes. Does it tell us about the economy in Europe and the path of inflation in Europe?
It surely has lessons. Does it imply exactly the same thing? Probably not. I have this project with the teams at the Bank of England and the ECB and the BOJ, Bank of Japan, to do the same exercise and to see whether the decomposition is similar. My guess, I mean, I have some results, but nothing I can really show yet. My guess is that the general story will be similar. The big question will be the degree of overheating. The UK looks very much like the US with worse shocks.
Yeah.
But the same dynamics. The Eurozone, I think the big issue there is whether the labor market is overheated. Because the challenge of the Fed is that the labor market is overheated for sure. Now, does the ECB have the same challenge or not? Cannot tell yet.
It's comforting to hear that the UK might have the same dynamics. I live there and inflation seems extremely stark. And the worry at the moment is that expectations will shift.
My sense is you have bigger shocks. One of the results in the preliminary report of the team at the Bank of England is that your measure of shortages plays much more of a role than it does in the US. One wonders whether it has anything to do with Brexit, but I'm not going to.
That's another podcast.
I'm not going to go there.
That's another podcast.
But it is striking. So I don't know if it's an accident. It's true. We have to look. But if it is, then I think a good part of what's happening comes from there. That should go away eventually. And yeah, so I don't think the situation is as dismal as some people put it on that front.
Olivia, thank you for talking about what seems to be like a very fruitful piece of work that there is a lot of potential for finding out a lot more, not just about what's happened, but about how inflation is working now in the economy that we have today. Thanks for talking about it.
I hope so. We'll see.
The paper is called What Caused the US Pandemic Era Inflation. You can find it all over the place. And it's very short, very interesting to read. And as I said, it comes to a lot of very interesting conclusions. The authors, Ben Bernanke and Olivier Blanchard.
This has been a Vox Talk, recorded at the Paris School of Economics CEPR Policy Forum 2023. If you like what you hear, subscribe. You can find us wherever you get your podcasts, and you can listen to clips of past and future episodes when you follow us on Instagram at VoxTalks Economics.